This is so powerful. So I'm going to invite you, Kyle, to now offer your second question. If you could ask that, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Florence. And Jeanette and Megan, I was just, you know, really reflecting on you know, how much inspiration again went into both of your pieces, and you know, what links you both, other than being Indigenous musicians, is your contribution to UAlberta, your contribution to pop and really the community of UAlberta that you're a part of. And so I was curious if you wouldn't mind sharing a bit with us about, you know, what was your experience like on campus or with UAlberta or in your department, or what are some moments of community that you would feel comfortable sharing? And Megan, you know, maybe we could hear from you first on this one. What has UAlberta been like for you, that sense of community, and even how that has informed how you're showing up today?
Yeah, well, I think that's a perfect question to, I wanted to really honor my collaborators on the song as well, who are both also U of A students. So the backing vocals are done by my friend Calypso Hain, who I actually met on campus through various events, poetry events, and then just kept on inviting to dinner because we just got along so well. And then my friend Michaela Borcher, who did the harp in the recording, which I I could just listen to the harp piece of, I just love it so much. Yeah, so that's my friend Michaela, who's also a student at U of A, and who I also met through poetry. yeah, I think that my relationship with U of A is a bit complicated. I mean, just as any Indigenous person in functioning in a colonial institution, I don't feel like I have any really loyalty or anything to the actual U of A institution, and particularly recently, especially with U of A's lack of taking a stance on speaking up about the genocide that's currently occurring in Gaza. So yeah, I definitely do not, I have my issues with U of A, but in my own experience of the community and solidarity between mostly Indigenous and Black faculty and students at the U of A, it's a community that has kept me alive and continues to nurture me and help me have the strength to speak when I maybe used to remain silent. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much, Megan, for sharing that. And I appreciate, yeah, the depth and sometimes the complexities of those relationships. And that brings us back to why even presenting our presence was started in the first place, right? Which is where, particularly in terms of Indigenous recognition and senses of community, is that, I mean, even just looking statistically, for Indigenous students that don't have that connection on campus, they're less likely to even complete their degrees if they don't have a sense of community. And so, yeah, Megan, I so strongly appreciate where you're coming from in that response. Yeah, and Jeanette, what are your reflections here when you're talking about the role of community? Right, we will rise. I'm so compelled to the understanding of who is the we and what is the rising and how that could be embodied. So yeah, if you wouldn't mind sharing your reflections here.
First, I just realized, and Megan talking about the collaborators for your song, I didn't mention that. I've forgotten actually. The song that my bandmates, Prairie Sky bandmates, Marty Sreko, who's actually a U of A professor, and my friend Sheila Hallett, who's she's the executive director, I think, of the Edmonton Seniors Coordinating Council, and my sweetheart, Kenny Mack. They're the bandmates on it. And Marty plays guitar. He plays mandolin. He's, you know, taking up, you know, slide or dobro. We call it the resophonic guitar. And my sweetheart, Kenny Mack, on bass. And Sheila, my friend, is on banjo. And you wouldn't think that you would want, like, to put a banjo and a mandolin on this song, because in some ways I'd envisioned a drum and a rattle, you know, that. And but to me, it's like I need to honor my bandmates too, right? And they made the song what it is. And so when I have to say, when I first heard it and I heard their harmonies, and Kenny Mack, my sweetheart, did the mixing and initial recording of it, I cried. Because I thought, it sounds so pretty, like somebody to step up and make your song sound better, right? And so I love collaboration. I could never imagine doing something by myself, just because there's such, to me, strength in weaving voices and weaving instruments. And, you know, anybody who is creative knows that, right? And even as scholars, when you come together on a panel or come together on a book or whatever, there's such power in that. So that was sort of the creating part of it. And I also want to say, this is going back to the making of the song, is that I too, like Megan, would write what I would loosely call poetry. So I always start with the word, the idea, and then I'd write it out. And so when I did We Will Rise, and I think it was December of 2021, I didn't have a melody for it. And I don't consider myself a musician. So I didn't know, how am I going to do these chords? So I was deferring to people I know who are songwriters and musicians. I'd say, I need some help. I don't know how to do this. Although I'd written a couple of earlier songs for my late sister and a late friend of mine. But I went, had a Zoom meeting with these friends and was trying to come up with ideas, and they were throwing out some thoughts, and I was completely mixed up. I didn't know what they were talking about. I went to bed, and when I woke up that next morning, I got out of bed and I knew immediately I had to honor my own ways of knowing. So I got up and I went to my computer, grabbed my guitar, and I started to play. And I just let the chords come, and I just let the melody come, and I cried through the whole thing. And it was because it also is about honoring ourselves, right? Honoring what comes through you. And saying to myself, you have to stop deferring to other people you think are better than you. I go through life thinking everyone is better than me. And so it was a lesson for me to learn to honor what we have, our own gifts, right? So anyway, I'm sorry, Kyle, that didn't go back to the community, but there is a community in the creation of a song, right? Because it takes a lot. And then when we remixed it, or we re-recorded, once you had told us that we could, that the song was picked, I thought, oh my God, the vocals are terrible, my part. So we went to, Dave Martineau and Laura Vinson have a studio in Brule. And I went and asked if he would re-record my vocals. And so he did that. And then Ken took it and remixed it. And so, again, it feels like I lived in Hinton, and Laura Vinson was a very good friend of my late sister, Lorraine Sinclair. And so it was like bringing that piece in. So it becomes in layers. So it becomes more than just yours. It becomes all of ours. And so so that's the song. So I go back to your question, Kyle, about the piece of community in going to the U of A. I came to U of A in 1990. Now, I know I sound like an old timer. Back in 1990, I came from U of C in Calgary, and I came to back to Edmonton. And I loved being around Indigenous people. I loved being around, I missed Cree people. There's nothing, not to say that I didn't enjoy the University of Calgary, but I missed our people. And so became a member of what we call, this is back when the School of, when Native Studies wasn't a faculty, it was called the School of Native Studies, in a house on campus. And we formed I think something like Native Studies Student Council. We didn't have a president or secretary or any of that. We wanted to form ourselves as equals. So we formed like a council. And organized events, organized a conference. And it just felt to me like we're so strong together. And so that helped me get through my BA in Native Studies. And then when I went on, this is before the Indigenous Peoples Education Program was in effect. It used to be known as First Nations Indigenous Education that Dr. Stan and Peggy Wilson had developed. But before that, I knew that when I finished my degree in Native Studies, I had to go on. And there wasn't any other thing Indigenous on campus. So what did I do? I went to anthropology. So Dr. Michael Ash was my supervisor at the time. There wasn't very many Indigenous faculty around. And the focus of my work is always on our people. I don't care if it's anthropology. I don't care what the faculty is. I'm going to always focus on our people. And so I did my master's there. And while I was doing my master's, the First Nations Education Program was started. And my friend Jane Martin was in that program. And she was working on her master's at the time. And I thought, I want that. We don't have that. Like in anthropology, we didn't have that. And it was lonely. It was really, really lonely. I had such a hard time writing, and just the loneliness was overwhelming, because as you know, when you're working on a thesis or, you know, whatever you're writing, it's so lonely. And so when I saw that program was started, I thought, okay, I want to go over there. And so went to an Indigenous Scholars Conference in 1995, I think it was, and met some amazing Indigenous scholars, and I was so inspired. Some of them aren't around anymore, but I had never seen so many people present Indigenous, and that they spoke from their hearts and they cried and they had us all crying. And I thought, these are my kind of people. So I want to be a part of this. So that's how I went on to do. And then they changed the name to Indigenous Peoples Education, IPE. And through there, we always, through our research, at being a research assistant on a research project, that type of thing, you form really deep, long-lasting friendships with your peers, because we all can relate to each other. You have family issues, you have breakups, you have deaths, and you have all kinds, and then celebrations. You know, so you become, your colleagues become your family, like your sisters, your brothers, your uncles, right? And if it wasn't for that, I could never have lasted as long as I did to actually complete my PhD, which I finally did in 2013. But that was through like the death of my sister, the death of my father, you know, just on and on, and struggles and worrying about family. And I remember thinking, if I get that degree, I'm going to pat myself on the back, because it's not just so much about the journey, the intellectual journey. It's about all of the stress that's going on in your life around you, and you have to stay focused, and you still have to be strong and get your work done. So it was like a significant part of my life. It was at the University of Alberta, and it was a connection to Indigenous traditional knowledge holders, Dr. John Cryer, Dr. Stan Wilson. It's Elder John Cryer. I think of him as a doctor because his knowledge of Indigenous knowledge is as important and is as deep as a scholar. And so, but all of the elders that we've met over the years, they helped me get through. They helped me write my papers. They helped me have the strength to focus on whatever my topic was. You know, it all comes back to yourself, right? And when I did my master's, I would hold an eagle feather and I would say, it's your turn to talk. And so it's like giving myself permission to write. And I would put my feather down. I always had a smudge going. And that's how I wrote. And so it was without our culture, without our ways of knowing, without the people who are also on campus trying to, you know, keep going and survive and make our mark and our contributions, I wouldn't have been able to do it. I wouldn't even have wanted to do it. So yeah, that community is huge for us, for our survival and for our success. So yeah, that's a long-winded answer, Kyle, but meant a lot to me. I believe it or not, as much as we challenge the university, and sometimes we go through periods of time where they'd actually listen. And it was nice to have that support along the way. But then, you know, then you have it taken away and then you lose another fight. But it's okay because it helps you be strong, helps you find your own warrior within, right? Yeah. So thank you for asking.
Please go ahead, Megan.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond because, like, I'm in the process of my PhD right now, and I've been thinking about it. I'm like, when I finish, I used to think if I finish, but now I'm saying when I finish, I'm going to take, like, the paper they give me, and I'm going to cut it up. I'm going to rip it up into, like, hundreds of pieces, and then I'm going to get each little piece framed and give it to, like, all my friends and family that have helped me through.
So that's
what I'm going to invite just each of you to talk a bit about the work that you did for your doctoral studies and the work you're doing, Megan, for your doctoral studies. But would love to know what your doctoral work was about, just because you've both talked about that journey. And now I'm curious. So, Megan, would you like to start? You're in the midst of it and you may not even have it formed down yet, but where are you thinking? What are you thinking about? What are you wandering around? What ideas are you wandering around?
always wandering. This is what I'm doing right now. All my books. I'm doing my comprehensive exams right now. So, I started off my PhD in nursing. I was a registered nurse. I'm no longer a registered nurse. But I would never got to read Indigenous authors in nursing. They always wanted me to read mostly white authors. And if there was any Indigenous content, it was usually about Indigenous people written by white savior types. So I'm really glad that I switched to Native Studies. It's a lot of work, but I just am grateful every day to be able to read, like, our own scholarship and, like, our own ideas. It's so beautiful. And what I will be doing after I finish my comprehensive exams, like I said, I'm a poet, and so I'm really looking at, it also links to my previous work as a registered nurse. I used to work in the Indigenous Wellness Clinic at the Royal Alex, and before that I worked as a psychiatric nurse at the Montreal Children's Hospital. So I've done a lot of work in Indigenous, specifically like Indigenous mental health care, but also Indigenous primary care. And I just was always searching for, I guess, healing for Indigenous people, and the way that the Western medical system was telling me that how Indigenous people can find healing just wasn't, you know, I tried for, I think, maybe 6 or 7 years in that area, maybe longer, and it just, like, never made sense. And so now I'm doing, Cree, mix of Cree, studying Cree philosophy and Cree storytelling, and how those are healing and medicine for us and our people. That's what my work is going to be. And it's also mostly focusing on queer and trans Indigenous youth. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Wow, so powerful. Thank you. And Jeanette.
I want to say, Megan, I'm glad to hear you're not saying if, but you're saying when, right? When you're going to be finished. And so that's really good. I have to look up the name of my dissertation. I use my dissertation as a prop up for one of my monitors is too low. So I I put my dissertation there. I've got a couple copies. And that's where they are. That's probably nobody's even read it, certainly not in my family. But it's called In the Footprints of Our Ancestors, Exploring the Reconnection to My Cree Ancestors, Anskotapanak, and Ancestral Land in the Lesser Slave Lake Area. So what I'm trying to do now is I will use this song, like We Will Rise, as I said, it's like a guidepost kind of, because I'm wanting to publish now. And it's not, I'm not wanting to publish like I think, oh, I'm so smart and I have all this knowledge to share. It isn't about that. It is about honoring our words, honoring the stories of our people, right? And so when my focus was on sort of my family kind of as a case study, kind of autoethnography, kind of like that, it didn't really fit into any particular category. But I focused on my two grandmothers in particular, their stories, both my kokums. And as I would write, I would weep because I cried thinking about how hard their lives were. My kokum Agath used to say, "I mun." I always thought she was saying, "Hi, mun." I didn't really know what it meant, but I thought it meant I'm tired. But I'm tired as Ninistasun, right? "Hi, mun," is it's hard. Her life was hard, but she kept going. And so as I'm writing about her, I was kind of using not just genealogy, but I was using the stories, our stories. What do I remember about her? And what was it like for her? So as I would write her story, I always had a box of Kleenex beside me because I was always crying. And my other kokum, who I never met, was bedridden and had multiple babies being bedridden, never being able to walk. And she died at 33. And so I've written songs since then about my mom losing her mom at 33. I have songs in the work about what it was like for my grandmother to not be able to walk. Not never. I think she lost her ability to walk, I think, in having babies, right? She was a tiny little person. But so it's bringing life to those stories. And so I want to share those stories. It's more than the narrative of my work. I don't think people are really interested in the academic piece unless you're a student. But so I want to then bring life to the work, to the text, by writing poems and songs and using photographs and using humor, because humor is who we are, right? We survive the pain through our humor, through being there for each other. So I'm inviting my family to share some of their stories and weave it into the work to bring life to the work. And also my master's, I interviewed like 22 Indigenous people in the Lesser Slave Lake area. So I want those stories to come out because they're worth knowing, because we kind of don't have the opportunity to sit around sharing stories anymore. And so I have their recordings, I have their photos. So for me, that's why I'm looking to publish, is to share our stories. And so it feels like it's my contribution before I get too old, you know, to share that with whoever is interested in reading it. And even if I, you know, get to a point where I've got a manuscript developed and nobody's interested in publishing it, well, we'll have to publish it ourselves, right? And if, you know, only the family buys it, oh, well, right? It's done. It's there. So I think of it in that way. It's just something that I have to do and I want to do. And so that's my next journey. That's the next part of my journey. I'm in it right now. I'm doing it and writing proposals for funding. And, you know, it sometimes feels daunting, like the PhD, like the master's degree. It's always daunting. But, you know, if you just take it piece by piece, you'll get through it. What I'm working on.
Wow, so many good lessons and beautiful words. Thank you. I'm going to invite Cindy to now go ahead. And thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, Florence. And oh my goodness, this conversation is so rich and beautiful and so many beautiful teachings. And I want to read your work, Jeanette. Megan, I want to read your work. I want to keep walking alongside of you and bringing life to those stories, because that's what I'm passionate about also, our women's stories. And so, yeah, feeling just my heart is just so full from our time together and from your songs and from your sharing of your journey with it and the continuity and the community. I'm just like, yes, giving voice to our community in that bigger sense. So grateful for this time together with all of you, and for Kyle for sticking to your inspiration for having Indigenous artists and not letting go of really wanting to make that happen. So just kind of acknowledging that, and especially as you're kind of sharing those teachings from if to when. I love that, Megan. Oh my God, I said if for the first 3 years, I think, of my PhD. Then I said, if I'll ever get tenure, if I'll ever, and it's like, wow, yeah, what happens when we say when, you know? And so feeling like Jeanette, like, my God, in the 1990s, you're a trailblazer. You know, sitting with a trailblazer once again. So humbled and full and so, so grateful. So hi and merci. And I look forward to, Jeanette, another tea on my front porch with you, and Megan being at another celebration of life with mutual friends with you also.
Thank you, Cindy. And Kyle, I'll invite you to go next.
Oh, to continue Cindy's thought on the power of words, and, you know, it not being an if but a when, and both of you, how you wrote your lyrics that that have this "we will rise" and "I'm not alone" and the strength of those sentiments and what it means really to be right and to be an Indigenous student or academic or learner or musician or somebody trying to make it in a Misquitchi Waskahigan. And you know, that's to bring it all back to the point of this show, is for us to find that resolve and that sense of community. And even just hearing the interconnections that you have amongst each other, of course, that this is just such a wonderful representation of even how presenting our presence will be looking forward, right? That really amplifying that sense of community and helping for people to revisualize what the Indigenous student and faculty and staff body at UAlberta looks like and how they contribute and all across the variety of ways, right? Whether it's through academia or whether it's in their own ways or whether it's through music, and you're each a part of that. So we're just so honored to continue to steward your music into the episodes and the relationships ahead. So merci.
Thank you so much, Kyle. So I want to express our gratitude to Megan and Jeanette, and I will invite each of them to close this episode of Presenting Our Presence with their final words that they would like each of us who are listeners of this podcast/vodcast to hear the messages from their powerful voices. Thank you. Jeanette?
Well, again, I feel like it's really, truly been an honor to be invited to be a part of this. I have to say that I wouldn't have thought, first of all, that I would be a part of it. But I was watching, when I was watching some of the videos, the pop videos, I loved them. I thought, wow, these need to be out there. So they were so engaging. And I loved how you all did it like a tea. People coming together, having a visit, because it puts us at ease, right? And it feels like we're just the five of us sitting in circle together. And I love that. I love the honoring each of our voices and each of our roles, you know, that in making this happen. So for me, it is truly an honor to be a part of this. It feels really good. And I feel like you're all my close friends. And it feels like just to be able to share when you're creating something, to be able to share how that came about feels really good. It's something that I'm not really used to, but it's really lovely. And so I'm really happy to have, you know, been a part of this process. And I'm looking forward to sharing that with my people that I know in my life. And yeah, this is a really important initiative. I'm thinking maybe you all didn't even know how significant it was going to be, what a contribution that you're making. And maybe you did know, I don't know, but I just think good on you, all of you. I wish I could say it in Cree, like, congratulations, but how about Nanaskamo, you know, Kananaskumtan to each of you for what you've done and what you continue to do. And for Megan to having the courage to create such a beautiful piece of art, beautiful work that takes courage. And so thank you for that too, Megan. I'm happy to be a part of something where we're both contributing. So hi. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette. And Megan.
I'm just really, really grateful for this time and space to visit. And I think like this is what I really love about, I tell my mom sometimes, like, I'm so grateful, I'm so thankful that I'm so lucky to be Cree. And, you know, from her experience being adopted, not in the 60s group necessarily, but around the same time by her like white biological grandparents, but who are still very racist. She hears me say that sometimes, and she was like, you know, I never really thought I'd ever hear anybody say that they're lucky to be Cree. But that's what I mean, because this kind of community, the feelings that I can access when I am held in this way is so beautiful, and I wouldn't want anything else. And the backing vocals on my piece, we very intentionally had them come in for the I am not alone section. And that is what this has felt like for me, is that I'm not alone, and being in spaces like this reminds me. And that's what the song is for too, is that, you know, because I forget a lot, and I think a lot of people forget a lot. So it's those reminders of constantly, you know, we don't visit once and then it's over. It's constant visiting. It's like constantly singing to ourselves. And I think once I hear Jeanette's song a few more times, that'll be, you know, added to my own song bundle that I can sing to myself when I forget. So thank you so much. Hey.
Well, hi to both of you. And I just want to say that it is much love and gratitude for all that you shared with us. And first of all, with your beautiful music, and then the narratives of the woven together and the beautiful tapestry. And I so look forward to seeing your future poetry, and Megan, dissertations can include poetry, can include songs, and can include music. And Jeanette, publications can do that too. So however you wish to bring forward your gifts to share the work that you're doing will be appreciated by human beings. So much love and gratitude to each of you. Thank you, everybody.
It was way more fun than I was expecting. I was thinking I was going to be so nervous. I thought, you guys should send me some questions ahead of time. And then I thought, no, I had a smudge, and I thought, we're having tea. So I had to look at it like that.